RCR with Paul Brennan.
So why has Richard Preble, former ACT leader and Labor minister, resigned from the Waitangi Tribunal? We found out about that in a piece he wrote in the Herald, Why I've Resigned from the Waitangi Tribunal. And Richard Preble is with us to tell us. Richard, welcome back to RCR. Thanks for coming on.
My pleasure.
Before we get into that, because it's just happened relative to the time we're chatting here, Winston's sacking of Phil Goff for comments he made regarding Trump. Was that a sacking offence? I mean, I could, you know, read the quotes. You probably know them already. But is that a sacking offence? And should he have told the Prime Minister?
That's interesting, isn't it? Normally, it wouldn't have been. But we have in Mr. Trump a person who takes any insult extremely seriously, as we can see. The fact that the United States is withdrawing even intelligence from Ukraine. When you're weighing everything up, much as I like Phil Goff, his career against New Zealand, sorry, Phil, you're going to have to take one for the team.
Right, that's what's happened. Okay. Robert Patman is saying one thing is pretty clear after this has happened. New Zealand and the United States no longer share values, norms, or views. As long as Trump is president, Trump's contempt for the rules-based international order, how many times have you heard that, and his siding with the aggressor in Ukraine conflict serve to underline this. It's a kind of a split developing here, isn't there, between those who see this conflict as Russia invading their special military operation and ignoring what happened before that, and those who see it in a more historical light. Is that fair?
I'm not sure, because it all depends which bit of history you want to pick. What is clear is that Mr. Putin doesn't keep his word. He signed three different treaties with regard to Ukraine, all promising not to invade, and he's broken each one of them. And I think Mr. Zelensky makes a very good point. Why does anyone believe that he will observe another peace treaty unless there's something, some security backing him up? That seems to me to be a fact. It may be one that Mr. Trump wants to ignore, or perhaps Mr. Trump's being cleverer than that. He just wants the Europeans to front up. And in that sense, he's been quite successful. United States presidents have wanted Europe to spend more on defence. Trump's come along and they've suddenly falling over themselves to spend more on defence.
Okay. Let's get now to you resigning from the Waitangi Tribunal. I want to play this clip first and get your reaction to it, then we'll get into it.
Richard Preble, who apparently can't read the fine print before he goes on to the tribunal. It's a shameful, shameful stunt from Mr. Preble in terms of promoting the filthy, rotten treaty principles bill. Minister Paul Tucker's been tricked into appointing a right-wing agent provocateur to cause an embarrassing stunt to smear the tribunal, and sadly, Minister Paul Tucker fell for it. I warned him. I told him it was a mistake, that he was that Preble had talked about the tribunal being racist, apartheid, but I tried to help poor Tucker, Mr. Speaker, but he wouldn't listen.
All right. Okay. So you can't read the fine print.
Look, that's Willie Jackson. He's a bit of a shock doc. I feel a bit sorry for Willie, because the Maori Party in Parliament will just cap anything that he says. So he's getting more and more extreme. But there are a number of things I do want to make clear. Let me put it this way. The tribunal has said that it has the power to say what the principles of the treaty are and invent new ones. They also say they're not bound by previous rulings that they've made. They can have new ones tomorrow. Well, I think Mr. David Seymour's bill's in a bit of a reaction to that. But my answer is not that I support David Seymour's bill, though I think the principles that he's enunciated are the principles of a democratic society. My view is that there's nothing wrong with the treaty that was signed in 1840, and it doesn't need to be rewritten by the tribunal or by David Seymour. I mean, the principles are very simple. The Crown promised protection. Maori ceded sovereignty. The Crown promised Maori to guarantee their property rights, hasn't always kept that, and the Crown extended citizenship. That's all there is in the treaty. We should be proud of it. There's no need to rewrite it. And here we've got the tribunal saying, actually, there's not one treaty. We've had to think about it. We now think there are two. And the second treaty completely contradicts the first. I know future historians are going to laugh and say, how could anyone have seriously said that? We know a great deal about what happened in 1840 because there were independent people there who wrote about it. None of them support the present description. We've even got Henry Williams, who, for goodness sake, was a missionary, a person of great integrity, who wrote a letter saying that for 3 days he went through all the matters of the treaty to make sure that the chiefs all understood what they were being asked to sign. And I find it quite offensive that 185 years later, we've got some academics who are basically saying that Williams was a devious character, not to be trusted, and that his translation, which wasn't challenged at the time, they've got a new one. But this isn't new. Churches have split over arguments over what a word means. We fought civil wars over the arguments of words. And really, we ought to look past it to see what was the spirit of the intent. And I've no doubt what it was. It's interesting that the chiefs who signed, none of them, even Honeyheke, who cut down a few flagpoles, he never said that he hadn't ceded sovereignty. He might have regretted having doing it, but he never said there were two treaties. Can I go back about Willie Jackson for a second?
Yeah, good. Go.
He and his boss, Chris Hipkins, have sort of said, I should have read the fine print and done the due diligence, I think it was, before I went on. What triggered my resignation was the fact that a few days ago it was circulated to me at the tribunal's strategic plan for the next 10 years. I'd actually been on the tribunal 3 months, but they only circulated it to me and then gave me a few days to comment. Then I actually found that I wasn't even on the members' mailing list, but I don't put a conspiracy down to that. What I did put it down to is how much they were going to value my contribution as a member. And then I had a look to see who they had circulated it to. And they'd circulated it to a wide range of people who are not members of the tribunal. Then I looked at the strategic plan and realised that they're right, that with their new interpretation of the treaty, we're going to have many, many more grievance claims. Now, I'm one of the people who helped set up the present tribunal, and the purpose of the tribunal was to actually solve grievances. We didn't set it up to be a grievance machine to create grievances. And the point that I made in my article is one that I don't think people have concentrated on, but saying that the citizenship clause means that the treaty was saying that in future governments will all guarantee that everyone in New Zealand is going to have equal prosperity. No government can make that promise. Even if we had a government made up of the Maori Party members, even though they had every single MP in Parliament, they could not deliver on that promise. Communist governments haven't been able to deliver on it, and we certainly can't. And we certainly can't. It's not in the treaty. It's a manufactured, made-up principle, and I'm not prepared to pretend that it can be done.
Equality of outcome.
I put it this way. What governments can do is they can create opportunities for people. Like, for example, successive governments have free education, but you can't actually make the pupils turn up to school. And in some schools, half the pupils today weren't there.
Is that what you mean when you say turning the treaty into a socialist manifesto?
That's right. Well, it's just this, the dream of socialists is that we're all going to be made to be equal. Well, we can be equal, by the way, when we've all got nothing.
Yeah. Okay, so the Treaty Principles Bill, has this been Has it been kind of a mistake to go there? Because there's a coalition agreement that speaks a bit to this, isn't there?
I don't know what I call it. I don't know if I want to call it a mistake. My own views on these matters, if Willie Jackson had read them, was that I've never been in favour of the treaty principles bill. I've always said those principles that David Seymour is enunciating, actually they should be protected in law, and the place for that is the Bill of Rights. To go into the treaties bill, he's got himself tangled up like the tribunal in arguments about the meanings of various words. And also my view is, if you look at the treaty itself, there's nothing wrong with it. In fact, it's a document we ought to be proud of. It was two peoples coming together peacefully to create a nation. We don't need a second treaty, and we certainly don't need people going around creating principles that would come as a great shock to not just to Governor Hobson, but the chiefs. I mean, I've been put on a hearing, and the basics of it is there's a claim being made that it's social welfare is a breach of the treaty because not all beneficiaries are equal to have equal income with everyone else. I don't understand why we're even looking at it. The tribunal doesn't have to look at everything. You know, most of the claims that are filed are ignored. So there's been, you know, people have filed things like dog licensing is contrary to the treaty. Well, the tribunal quite sensibly hasn't looked at it. But when the tribunal does look at something, that's a statement by the tribunal. They think it's got merit even before they've heard the case. And indeed, I think the only case that's ever been lost in front of the tribunal was the claim that kiwi fruit was somehow a promised under the treaty.
Didn't heard of that
one.
Which
will become a bit of a surprise to the Chinese.
Yeah, right. Well, that's where it came from. So they cherry pick the cases, do they?
And there's nothing wrong with that in principle. The US Supreme Court has thousands of cases filed at it every year, and it cherry picks the ones it's going to take that it regards as important. Nothing wrong with the tribunal cherry picking cases they think is important, but when the tribunal thinks that it's a treaty principle that social welfare outcomes will be equal, no government ever has achieved that and won't hear. We ought to make some strong statements. I'm in favour of a more equal society. I'm in favour of extending opportunity, giving a hand up to those who've got less. But I would never say to anyone that that's going to mean that everyone succeeds, because it's human nature. You give people opportunities and some people take it and others don't.
Is it time to wind it up?
The tribunal?
Yeah.
I think it's time to review it. They've got a coalition agreement to do that. I'm not sure we need to wind it up, but I do think that it's just simply not fair on the Maori Land Court judges that they've been given the job. Their background is Maori Land. They've done a great job, and as far as anyone can, in sorting out iwi versus iwi and iwi versus hapu disputes. A lot of people don't realise that takes a great deal of the tribunal's time, and they have the expertise in that. But they're not constitutional scholars. They're certainly not authorities on government. And the original intention was to appoint a high court judge or a retired high court judge, and I think that's what should happen. Someone who's got a bit more experience in these important issues.
Richard Preble, thanks for coming on RCR. Really interesting.
My pleasure.